Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Singularity series on Curious Apes. Please welcome our next guest, Scott Barry Kaufman.
To start, I would love to just have you tell us a little bit about the motivation for Transcend, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about the adjustments to Maslow's hierarchy that you brought to attention in the book.
I was very motivated to write this book because I felt like there was a whole story untold about Maslow and the field of humanistic psychology more generally. There's a lot of people have heard of modern day positive psychology and happiness studies and the science of happiness and all that. But there were a bunch of psychologists in the 50s and 60s that were really interested in a whole set of things that really resonated so deeply with me when I encountered it. They were very interested in things like growth and creativity and humanitarian purpose and spirituality and wholeness, integration, confronting your dark side. Just so many themes that those are the themes I wanted to be working on. I didn't actually resonate with the happiness stuff that much. That felt like a luxury in a way. But the humanistic psychologists were really interesting. And then Maslow, when I dived in deeper, I was like, wow, there's so much richness here and so much complexity that isn't told. And even misperceptions and misrepresentations of his theory, such as the pyramid, which he never drew. There was no hierarchy of needs pyramid.
Yeah, you're destroying a lot of dreams there. So how does a lot of pop psychology. So how does the sailboat kind of change the pyramid into something that you think is better? Why is the sailboat metaphor a better one to use?
I developed the sailboat metaphor because I thought I did a better job encapsulating Maslow's notion between the D realm and the B realm. So when we're deficiency motivated in life, we're in this D realm of human existence where we're motivated by our deficiencies. That's what the D stands for, is deficiencies, in case of people's imagination they're trying to hit. What does that D stand for? Yeah, deficiency. And so things like lack of food, lack of connections, lack of self-esteem, those things represent the boat in the sailboat. Whereas when you open the sail, that's growth. And when you open the sail and move vulnerably in the sea, the vast unknown of the sea, I mean, there's so much unknown, right? I have no idea right now what's coming at me. Well, who's calling me next? You know, that I don't even know who's going to call me. What emails were they like, will you write my dissertation for me? You know, it's like, no, I'm not going to write your dissertation. I get so many of these kinds of emails. Anyway, there's so much unknowns, and you have to manage to keep going towards the port that you want to go toward. You have to choose that growth option day after day, but I would say minute after minute, because you will be pulled in many, many different directions internally and externally. Sometimes the internal things that pull you in different directions are more powerful, in fact, than the external, even though we tend to focus in politics, on the external.
And while we're laying some of the foundation of the concepts here, how does that relate to the ideas of self-actualization and transcendence?
You know, you can think of self-actualization as, what is that unique creative potential that is in you and only you, and probably that has ever existed in the history of the universe. Whereas transcendence is being able to integrate that creative actualization, those seeds of creativity, in a way that is synergistic with society, that is not only good for you, but also good for the world, and automatically good for the world, but just by being yourself is improving the world in some, you know, is helping others self-actualize. You know, you can spend your whole life self-actualizing and not really help many other people self-actualize. But if your calling and the sort of commitments you have in your life to for mastery are things that impact your own self-action and the self-actualization of others, that's when you start getting to into the realm of transcendence, as far as I'm concerned.
Were you ever interested in the idea of the hero's journey? Because when I think of what you're saying there, it very much mirrors that idea of going into chaos, doing something that helps you authentically pursue transcendence, and then bringing back the gifts of your journey to society and making it better.
Yeah, I love the hero's journey. My own personal story is a little bit of a hero's journey, although it seems a little bit self-indulgent to call it myself a hero, but
but we all are, right, in our own little ways.
Yes, but better for someone else to call me that than for me to, but the journey is definitely something I resonate with. Just being a dorky little kid in special ed and as a child, and not really feeling much sense of potential, and yeah, fighting my way out of that.
Yeah, what role do you think technology is playing in these kind of concepts then? Because I think of something like, you know, going out into the world, doing your hero's journey, being authentic, and immediately my mind goes to everyone trying to comment on the same trending hashtag, everyone using the same filters to try to get the same kind of likes and attention from people. And it feels like pulls people very much away from authenticity, or from, you know, embracing the scariness of the hero's journey of going into the unknown alone to find yourself.
I got it. Someone tweeted something to me today. Can I be self-indulgent again, since we're on that theme?
Please do.
Someone tweeted to me. They said, "You are a rare bird, Scott, who wears a very thin mask compared to most of us. That allows you to relax in your own skin and just do what comes naturally, which just happens to be a nice combination of the geeky and the goofy. It's aspirational. Don't change." Now, I just am reading that because that tweet made my day.
Yeah.
Like, I woke up this morning, read that tweet, and I was like, that made my day, maybe made my life. But that's I feel seen with that tweet. And I feel like this relates to a lot of things you're talking about, because I don't try to be anyone else, even in technology. But I feel like so many people are trying to. They have different people. They have the person they are on social media. They have the person they are as a professor. They have a person they are with their family. You know, when I'm just like my way of being. I roll up to teach to be a professor, and I'm cracking jokes, and I'm a stand-up comedian. You know, I walk over to social media and write stupid things, and then I hang out with my friends and get drunk and get silly and get high, whatever, you know. Like, I just, like, I think there's a real value in wearing that thin mask, as the person said. I think there's a real value in it, and not everyone's gonna, I mean, there's kind of like a theory of, like, you know, well, not everyone's gonna like it. You can't please everyone. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, like, I mean, the point of life is not to please everyone. That's not the point of life. The point is, I mean, I don't even know what the point is. I guess I'll come to, I'm going to, you ready?
The please, point is, if you have, yeah, if you have the meeting, please tell us here.
You ready? I was right about to do it once and for all. But I think, you know, so much of life is really realizing your own unique potentialities and ways of being. And I was very uncomfortable with my ways of being for decades of my life. And even in my 20s, I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. And I would constantly try to be someone else, you know, like, you know, going to dance clubs and flashy outfits and things. And I had an epiphany, which was like, holy cow, you mean just being myself is enough?
Yeah.
That's quite an epiphany to have.
It is, but how do you think that people in this day and age struggle to have that epiphany because of the technological constraints? And specifically, I think of with the sailboat, you know, and the ideas of self-esteem, and I think of the human proclivity towards social acceptance. And with so much of our lives digitized now, you have all of these addictive hooks and ways to make you feel insecure or narcissistic. And it's like, how the hell do you navigate that now?
I mean, it's why are you using technology? Why are you using it? And I'm not asking you personally that question, but one should ask themselves that question and be honest with themselves. Mm-hmm. Be honest with themselves. Are they, you know, like they're Instagram influencers where like the reason why they're using social media, a lot of them is to promote their brand. Mm-hmm. And well, actually, there's nothing wrong with like wanting to promote your brand. Like I could use to do that even more. I'm not terribly good at self-promotion. I should work on that. So there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mean to throw any shade on Instagram influencers, but there must be some people who their goal, if they're honest with themselves, is narcissistic attention. There must be, mm-hmm. you know, they must be out there. You know, when you look on Instagram, have you ever noticed anyone on Instagram? You're like, that's probably they're on there for narcissistic attention.
I mean, I do some research actually, and like the literature supports that it correlates.
Yeah, there's that's got to be a thing.
Yeah,
and you know, and I would argue, I'm very non-judgmental. I'm not condemning those people, but I'm saying, be honest with yourself about the reasons. I think there are beautifully self-actualization oriented growth reasons why one could use social media to engage and build up a nice community. I've said this a lot lately, but I'm quite fond of my followers. Like, yeah. I'm quite fond of them. Like, they, you know, they're very thoughtful and human, and I love that. The day that I look at my followers and I don't like them anymore, I think would be a really important sort of moment of self-reflection of like who have I become? Because I do think that the people who are attracted to us are a reflection of who we are in a mm-hmm. large way, and we don't realize that. We really don't. You know, when are relationships, and we'll be like, oh my God, why do I always attract the narcissist? You know, I mean, you know the people who say that all the time? Yeah. They're like, it's always a zero some game. I'm perfect angel and the partner is always the narcissist.
Yeah.
It's like, well, look, look, there's something in common among all of those partners. It's you. So I'm all about self-honesty. Mm-hmm. I've had to have a lot of self-honesty in my life, and some of it hasn't been pretty. But I think it's just the most, in some ways, it's the most important route to growth.
Yeah. Are there methods or ways that you have seen useful for helping people maybe bolster their self-esteem or to get out of that deficiency motivation? Because in the case of like the narcissism online, it does feel like, and from what I understand from the literature, it's often coming from a place of, you know, lower self-esteem or a lack of maybe belonging in their real life. Like when you have a tool that's right there, giving you all of these opportunities to make all these connections and feed your ego, how do you step back and do the hard work instead?
Yeah, because that's a very potent drug, having your ego fed. Whew. It's hard. It's really potent. It's intoxicating. That's why a lot of people get in relationships where they get love bombed, and then they like, then you feel like you can't, you feel like you're trapped, you can't move, you can't leave, because you were like pulled in, your ego was pulled in, and you're not honest about why you were pulled in. This is deep stuff, my friend.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to make you all the answer all the big questions.
We're jumping in the deep end here. We're jumping in the deep end. But I think that the deep end of humanity, but I think that it's like having a mindful awareness of your choices and your motivations. Some of it is very unconscious, but you know, being able to make the unconscious conscious is one of the greatest routes to growth. I mean, it's a whole process. There's a whole process of self-actualization. I've created a new form of coaching called self-actualization coaching that I'm currently developing a certification program for. And it's a whole, you know, it involves a lot of self-honesty and reflection and meditation and awareness and loving kindness.
Were you ever into Jung and his idea of like individuation and how he kind of pulled the alchemical steps into it?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so do you think there's, do you put stock in that idea of kind of like the ego death as a start to the journey?
I don't know. I don't think we ever can have ego death. As long as we still have a self, I think it's going to be very hard to have ego death. I think that my project is more integrating it because my ego got me through my 20s and it got me out of special ed. I mean, I had a whole crusade of I'll show them how smart I am. I think that was a really without that motivation, and it was an ego-bound motivation, but without that motivation, I wouldn't be who I am today. I'm actually my perspective is more about honoring the beauty of the dark side as a route to growth and a route to integration. I get I kind of roll my eyes when I see things like ego death, because the people who say they have their ego death tend to be the most narcissistic people you'll ever meet. I write a lot about this. I write about what I call spiritual narcissism. There's a lot of people in the spiritual community who think they're better than others because they, quote, have their ego death or this, or they're enlightened and they're like, I'm more enlightened than you, you know? And like, that's actually a narcissistic view of the world. I'm all about horizontal transcendence, not vertical transcendence. And unfortunately, I see a lot of the woo-woo spirituality world is so focused on vertical transcendence.
Yeah, do you,
Not about that. Not about that.
yeah, do you think that's a result of, like, when I think of society in a lot of ways right now, not to be too cynical about it, but I feel like we've done a really great job at securing some of the lower levels of the hierarchy or of the boat with security. And then we've realized that because the other aspects of our needs are so abstract and nebulous and ephemeral, they're really great products to sell. Because it's not concrete, right? You can tell somebody you either have food or you don't, you have a roof over your head or you don't, you know, you have some sense of security or you don't. But how do you know people really love you? You know what I mean? And it feels like we've really got a bit exploitive about those higher tiers of our needs.
That is, I actually, this is so interesting. I want to hear more of your thoughts. How did we get exploitative about the higher needs? That's a fascinating idea.
You know, like you said, we have the luxury life coaching, we have the self-optimization stuff, you know, we have this these messages through advertising especially that is all about, you know, looking better to your peers, being more accepted, about, you know, the attention economy that we have on social media. So many of these aspects of what we're really selling to people, I feel like, is kind of like the Edward Bernays version of, like, how do you want people to like you? You know, how can you be the most authentic version of you with my product? You know what I mean? And maybe that's cynical, but it does feel like a lot of our society is now focused on that, at least in the first world, or in developed nations, because the lower tiers are secure, more secure.
Oh yeah, it's almost like a luxury, but I don't think that, I think it's a chimera that those lower needs are secure. I think that. But that's why I did the sailboat, because life is not like a video game where you reach one level. I don't like talking in terms of levels, and I know a lot of people in the woo-woo spiritual world love levels, right? They're like, I'm a level 3 consciousness. It's like, shut the fuck up. I know, I'm being cheeky. A lot of our
That's
listeners are into that, and I just like literally made fun of them. But
cheeky is
but
good.
yeah. But I just don't think life is like a video game where you reach some level of anything and then you never return to the lower levels again. I think the big ego trap is thinking that life is like that. And I you know, as long as you're still human, and I think that's the problem with some of these narcissists, is that they think they've transcended their humanness and now suddenly they're superhuman. And I hate to break it to them, but they're still human. And you know, just because you're delusional and think you're superhuman now doesn't make you superhuman. I really want people to stay grounded to their humanity, and I think that's where the horizontal transcendence comes into play, is being so synergistic with the rest of humanity that you're really helping people with their real felt needs. And you also realize that any of the lower needs can crop up again at any point in time. And the easiest example is just hunger, right? Are you telling me you ever reach a level where you no longer are hungry? No, come on. That same thing, always hungry, right? And the same thing applies to all the lower needs. It applies to connection, right? You'll never reach a point where you no longer need people. Self-esteem, you never, and that's a big one, self-esteem. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people who think they've transcended, their mortal bodies tend to say, I no longer am, like ego death, right? That's the thing we talked about. It's like, no. As long as you're still human, your self-esteem will latch on to anything. Now all you've done is you've latched it on to your fact that you meditate 10 times a day, mm-hmm. right? That's all you've done is you've latched it onto that. And now that's, you've hitched your self-esteem on that, even though you're lying to yourself about it. So, it's Harsh Truths by Scott Barry Kaufman. That's what we should call this podcast episode. harsh realities. But I hope you see my point.
I do.
I would really rather have a model of spirituality and transcendence that is about the integration and the understanding of humanity and how what it means to be a human, which is messy, as opposed to a lot of the projects of a lot of people in the spiritual space, which is some sort of like super control and ultimate optimization of the human, where you become superhuman. And that's not my project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm blanking on his name right now. He wrote The Gulag Archipelago. Why can't I think of his name? Anyway, Solzhenitsyn, Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the line between good and evil runs between the middle of every human heart, but who has the power to rip out a piece of their own heart. And it feels like mm-hmm. a lot of what you're saying here is also embracing the fact that there are aspects of ourselves that do need work or that aren't great, aren't perfect.
Yeah, well, I don't think perfection is the goal either, though. Mm-hmm. I think people somehow think that's like the goal. Like they're like in the self-help space, I come across so many people that they're like constantly working on perfection. And man, that's a lot of pressure. People put a lot of pressure on themselves and then they get constantly disappointed when they're not reaching their potentials. I can't tell you how many clients I have who just feel like they're just constantly like, what am I going to be like on my deathbed? What am I going to be like deathbed? Am I making the choice that on my deathbed I'll regret? Am I making the choice? It's just like, calm down. You'll probably die suddenly anyway. You probably won't even have the deathbed moment. So you're putting so much pressure on yourself for a moment that probably will never come. Mm-hmm. How many people actually make it to like the deathbed moment?
Not many.
Usually people die in other ways. Look, I know. I'm just saying, it's just people put so much pressure on themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how can you experience life? It's not some trek up a mountain, but how can you have the optimal experience where you're in the flow state, where you have peak experiences, where you have love, where you have... See, what I'm trying to do, my mission, my project is to help people become more fully human, not superhuman.
Mm-hmm. And what does fully human mean to you? I mean, just off the top of your brain, what does that mean?
I don't know. To be fully human is to be fully human. Yeah. Like it's like, what do we have on offer among humans? What are our potentialities? We have higher potentialities. We have lower potentialities. We have hedonistic potentialities. We have meaning-making potentialities. We are so messy. Humans have evolved things we share with other animals. We have things that are uniquely developed. Like we have a uniquely developed consciousness, but we still have all those prepotent things, that no matter how constantly evolved we are, will make us go up and slap another human, and for instance, at an Oscars or something, we still have those lower order drives that, that can, completely control us or inform us, to be fully human is to be aware of it all. And work toward being the absolute best version of you you can be on a regular basis, which is not easy. But it doesn't mean perfection.
Right.
It means being forgiving of your imperfections. To me, being full human is hugely being forgiving of your imperfections and the imperfections of others. By the way, the people who cast the stones the most tend to be the ones that are most disintegrated within themselves.
Yeah, I feel like that's a big part of what I'm curious about with that relationship between technology and human potential. It is a big struggle between feeling connected and influenced by all of these sources of conformity, right? And all of that groupthink. And then you being here as the lone individual in the real world being like, all right, well, I could be me, but I don't know if that's going to get enough likes or if it's acceptable because all the people that I see constantly, the thousands of people online, look like they want to do that. And maybe I should be more of that instead of me. You know, there feels like a big tension there.
Huge tension. Tension is not really the word. I think pressure. Is that what the pressure? Mm-hmm. To conform.
Yeah, I mean, how do you resist that? You know, are there techniques that you recommend maybe in your coaching or that come from the psychological literature that
some people are naturally more resistant to it based on their personality?
Yeah.
Some people are more naturally drawn to conformity. I have a really cheeky theory that most of self-help is codependent, vulnerable narcissists attracted to grandiose narcissists.
Wow, that's a theory.
I was thinking of tweeting that, but I was like, wow, that might be too controversial. But there's an interesting dynamic that happens a lot among, you know, these kinds of things where certain personalities are really they're desperate to conform to something because they're very insecure that they can make, and they don't trust themselves to make their own decisions. So my answer to your question would be to learn to trust yourself more, to learn to trust your own inner experience, I think is a big part of self-actualization.
So that to me speaks to, I guess, like wisdom. And I was talking to a philosopher out of the Netherlands last week, Nolan Gertz, and he's been exploring how like technology and nihilism relate. So I'm wondering, like, are there aspects of wisdom that you think are suffering in the technological landscape that we are becoming? Yeah.
Yes. I don't know if you've ever heard my friend Daniel Schmachtenberger talk about this stuff.
Yeah. Love that dude.
Yeah. He's a good friend, and he was recently on my podcast, so people want to hear kind of us nerd out for a very long time about these precise issues. Definitely direct them to listen to that conversation. But, you know, there really is so much of the algorithm is designed to activate and trigger our most primal dopaminergic responses. And how can you design, like, how can you change that system? You know, I think you have to change the algorithm. You know, it's so much of it is not really our fault.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's our fault? Our fault is being human, and then someone's preying on that humanity. Well, is that really our fault?
Right.
You know, you can't like beat yourself up over being human, right? Like, you know, if the algorithm is that you're constantly going to be sending me things that trigger my deepest insecurities, right? Like, am I to blame that like I get defensive over that? You know, if the algorithm is like, we're going to send this algorithm, we're going to keep sending to Scott people saying, you're stupid, you're an idiot, right? Like, I'm reacting to that because I don't like being called stupid and an idiot. Yep. So I think we need to have more compassion for people who fall prey to a lot of this stuff. I really do believe in love and kindness, believe it or not, at the end of the day. Huge, huge to have that, and forgiveness. But also be a lot more mindful about who's designing this stuff. What are their motives?
Mm-hmm.
Not convinced there's the most pro-social motives in mind. With a lot of these technology inventions, and I think we need more investment, more money put towards people who have explicitly pro-social motives for this stuff.
What I always wonder, and it's kind of like the infinite turtle scenario, is like, how are those people who are creating the technology who don't have the most pro-social motives, how are they victims to their environment as well? You know. Like what needs weren't met for them or aren't being met for them?
It's a great point. I mean, it's turtles all the way down.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, I'm sure not saying that we shouldn't have compassion for them either, or we shouldn't have compassion for them. But I think they're still they're still doing what they're doing, right? And why are they doing what they're doing? Well, I don't need to know who ruined them in their childhood. Yeah. I just want them to leave.
Yeah. I don't need a life story. I just want it to stop.
Right. Right. I'm sure there is a life story, and I'm sure we can have compassion for them. That's a separate issue than, you know, you have someone in power who's a corrupt, you know, like a dictator, you know. I don't want to spend too much time figuring out how they got that way. I would like to remove them from power, please.
Right.
And then get them help and get them therapy once they're removed.
Priorities. Priorities are important.
Yeah. Yeah. Am I too cheeky for this podcast?
Not at all. I mean, okay. I love it.
Okay.
The more cheek, the better, in my opinion.
Cool. That's awesome. You like the big booty?
Yes, exactly.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Now it's too cheeky. No.
Yeah.
So we that's the wisdom side of things. So I know you also did a lot with intelligence, and you know, from my understanding, you have, I believe it's called the Flynn effect, where like generationally we've seen IQ gains. I'm wondering if there is potential because of maybe this post-truth science denial kind of fake news paradigm that we're finding ourselves in, where we're also like outsourcing so many of our questions to Google rather than like thinking critically for ourselves beforehand. Do you think there's a chance that we might see something like the Flynn effect start to rescind, or that we're maybe having negative impacts on IQ?
Yeah, I mean, you are seeing a reversal of the Flynn effect in some ways. You're also seeing a reversal of Flynn effect in terms of morality.
Mm-hmm.
So not everything's about IQ, right? You are seeing declines in morality. You're seeing declines in principles, you know. And part of the problem is tribalism run amok.
Mm.
Because, you know, oxytocin is a very, very powerful, potent drug in our body. Just like dopamine is, but oxytocin, it causes us to bond so much that we will cheat, lie, and steal for those that we're bonded to,
mm-hmm.
and without a moment's thought about it.
Yeah, isn't it we get confused that it's not just the cuddle hormone, but it's also the hate hormone? Because like
I think the most accurate thing is the in-group love hormone. Mm. It's not the love hormone, it's the in-group love hormone. You think about, you know, why it evolved, right? It's for mother-child bonding. I'll do anything to protect my child. I would die for my child. I would kill for my child. And then you scale it up to, like, just an interaction with someone about differences in politics. And it's like, whoa, calm down.
And then that's every day in a world where it's like the lines are constantly being drawn. You know, you have the outrage. I call it the outrage as orgasm problem, where everyone's just like getting so much dopamine from punishing norm violations.
Yeah.
It's very addictive. As we come to a time here, because I want to make sure that
Thank you. You
have some breathing room. Do you have any closing thoughts or anything you might want to say about kind of navigating human potential in a technological landscape or just in life in general?
Well, yeah, I am trying to start a modern day human potential movement that is grounded in science. I run the Center for Human Potential at humanpotential.co. And I think technology can play a big role in this. My colleague, Courtney Bigany, is starting a whole new field, positive product design. And I really encourage people to find out what she's up to. You can Google Courtney, Bigony, positive product design. There are people who are thoughtfully, I already mentioned Daniel Schmachtenberger, but there are others. There's a growing movement of individuals that I'm intersecting with to try to figure out those intersections between human potential and technology. I think that there's hope on the horizon among people that are intentionally trying to be positive. Now, of course, sometimes the best intentions can go wrong, but I think I'd rather have people who are like intentionally motivated to do good than those that are intentionally motivated to do bad. If I had to choose the two,
lesser of two evils, for sure.
You know what I mean? So,
well, great, man.
Yeah.
Well, we'll point people in that direction. So, Scott, thank you so much for your time, man. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Stephen, for the work you're doing, too.